had a dream about Gen Con last night.
Go on.
I dreamt that it was smaller and that there was only one line for going in.
Okay.
And I had my backpack. I was ready to play some games and explore and share our game. And they wouldn't let me in because I couldn't find my ticket. So I sat on the floor and I started to have a temper tantrum. And I started just like throwing stuff out of my backpack. And they just wouldn't let me in. And I couldn't find my ticket. And I was so mad.
What do you think it means?
No idea. It means I'm thinking about Gen Con.
Having a lot of anxiety.
But I don't have anxiety about Gen Con. I'm looking forward to it.
Really?
Yeah. I had a blast last year. It was great.
I'm having anxiety.
Someone's projecting. Don't project your anxiety onto my tantrum dream.
I could have had that dream. That's a great dream.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to The Misplay, where we design another Tier Zero strategy. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason.
Abstract game.
Tier Zero strategy.
Broken.
Tell them about The Misplay.
Well, we've been hard at work designing our final pivot.
Oh, final pivot. I like
it. You said no more pivots.
I like the way you say that, though.
I'm all in on abstract game, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
It's dying world. No, I'm not saying you're wrong and it's another thing. I'm saying abstract game is still dying world. Final pivot though. Yes, go on.
He blew my mind.
Abstract thinking.
I've shedded everything I thought about dying world. But we've been playing with some simple versions, basic mechanics, and we've stumbled into an unbeatable strategy if you have an orange shape and are playing orange pieces.
Right. I mean, I know. They don't know that though.
Well, we're going to talk about that, but I'm all in on abstract game, whether it's Dying World.
Your misplay was the misplay.
If you have a better one, I haven't played very many games this week.
No, it's fine. Yeah, we designed a broken strategy. I think that just means we're very good at games and making games.
And breaking our own games kind of hurts the replay value. Wasn't that in our mission statement? We want to make games that are replayable.
Yes.
That have meaningful decisions.
As long as I'm orange, I'll replay it.
Are your decisions meaningful, though? I play orange. I play orange. I play orange. I play orange.
Dominant.
Too strong.
Well, before we talk about where we're at with the game, let's talk about the game. Because on the last episode, we're like, it's dying world. Listen, I've got this idea, and the world is dying, and we need to get information off of it. Here's how we're going to do it. And now, as you very elegantly said, final pivot, what we're calling right now abstract game, has come from dying world. Explain abstract game, the final pivot.
Maybe it was a me problem, but when we were playing what was dying world with the relics and the building patterns and the collecting things, I found it really hard to visualize and see a landscape where the mechanics that we were playing with could feed into the theme and narrative that you were trying to describe in Dying World.
You weren't alone. Other Mark, Colacoma, he echoed that as well. He made that clear in his notes, playing it just the first time. He really digged the abstractness of the game, but didn't see, like you said, how those mechanics were tying into a dying world. Which sucks for me a little as a game designer to hear. But I got it. I understood it. And you guys were right.
To be fair, I'm so bad had a very clear vision for how this could become Dying World.
I really appreciated his comments saying that. But I understand that the correct path forward is to remove that theme from what we're doing. And if there is a world where we can bring it back, maybe we can layer it in there somewhere. But for right now, we're just focusing on this game as an abstract game.
I think before we describe it as abstract game, I think it is worth spending 30 seconds to talk about why abstract game kind of makes sense for us.
You said it well this month in our newsletter.
Games play quickly, It lets us test quickly. It lets us test more than sitting down and trying to play through a game that takes 40 minutes to play. We're able to design in kind of smaller bite-sized chunks. Like we've been texting like, oh, I don't think this piece works. How do we get the tiles into hands? There's a simplicity and elegance to what we're trying to build. And while there's lots of steps to go along the way to getting it to a product that we'll enjoy showing at Gen Con, it's much easier to work on this game with the size and scope that it's trying to take on. And I think it hits a lot of the elements of wanting to be a simple game, but having some amount of strategy implied to it. We need to find how to inject more. But also I thought back to really early when you pitched this whole game design project to me. You're like, we got to build something that we want to play. And if we think about the games that we play these like confrontational 1v1 games together.
Mark versus Jason.
We've come full circle.
All the way back.
Is abstract game Mark versus Jason?
No, I don't think it is. But the idea of, you know, just me trying to play against you is what this game is doing. Describe it in 30 seconds now.
Each player takes turns laying one tile per turn and manipulating the board in one way. Each player is also trying to build their own shape onto the shared board. The player that builds their shape first wins.
You had like 10 extra seconds. Ding.
Let me tell you about all the cool skins that I have for it. Have I told you about shish kebabs?
No, you have. I don't want to hear it again. But I will say, like you said a few minutes ago, we've done more testing on abstract game in 2 weeks than we did in 4 months of Animal Kingdom. He's cringing. He's closing his eyes right now, but it's true. You sent me a message. You were at home goldfishing games, you know, trying to figure out, you found your tier zero broken strategy that way. So we're going to talk about in this episode more about abstract game. We're going to give you more details. We'll talk about what the tiles, the pieces are doing, the abilities that they have, and how we are trying to create meaningful strategy. Before we do that, though, today's episode is sponsored by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is a YouTube channel welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, unboxings, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. I think a good way to describe Board Game Casual is like having like a really nice friend who's into board games, explain what they like, why they like it, show you all their sweet board game swag, and talk about the things they're working on as a designer themselves. In their latest design diary, they talk about intuitive, consistent, distinct iconography. I don't know what a lot of those words mean, but I like saying them in succession. If we're still making Animal Kingdom, Mark, that would be my platform. Give Board Game Casual a view at Board Game Casual on YouTube at Board Game Casual channel. Where are we? Got him.
On today's episode of the show, we're going to tackle the big questions. What's the game going to be called?
We are not really tackling that, but that's our fun little thing to talk about at the moment. Unless you're seriously saying you want to talk about it.
I don't think that's one of the big questions.
I don't know. Okay.
But I have been texting Jason great names.
I don't believe that's true.
I have
just read the first two on your list and we'll let the audience decide if they're great names.
The first one is hors d'oeuvres.
Yes.
The second one is shish kebabs.
There's no way for me to get direct feedback from the audience right now, but I'm so looking forward to when this episode airs on Tuesday, going in the Discord and hearing the response to those two names. Do you want to give any like description to go with that? Why you think those would be good names for this abstract tile placement game?
Well, you need a lighthearted theme for your abstract game. Azul has your building your mosaics. Hive has bugs jumping over each other. You need some kind of packaging to go with your game.
Hive sounds cool as heck. Shish kebabs?
When you're talking about 3D printing, though, you could make them and they could have a nice little toothpick thing. And then you're like picking one up and putting it on the plate and be like designing your own charcuterie board.
That's actually a game. Charcuterie.
Is it a tiling mosaic game?
Not sure. I doubt it. Tell me just some of your other names.
Blazin' Cadence. I even have a different musical name for this one if you really wanted to go down the musical road. It could be called Counterpoint.
Counterpoint is actually a decent name.
I've got one last good one for you. Mosaic Meditations. It's alliterative, sounds kind of nice, and I think could have some aesthetically, visually pleasing design to the tiles.
I put that somewhere between hors d'oeuvres and Blazin' Cadence.
I'm getting the feeling that you don't like my ideas for game names.
I don't. No, not at all. But this will be an episode at some point in the future where we talk about how to name something, because there's a lot to it. It's not just, this is my name and I'm just going to go with it. There's a lot of work that goes into naming things.
It seems I've stumbled across something that's a much bigger question than I originally thought. Why don't you tell us the current state of Abstract Game? What does it do? How does it play?
Currently, the way that the game is played is you play a tile, and there's three different tiles in the game. There's gray, there's blue, there's orange. Every time you play a tile down, it does something to the board. You have in your hand a card that has a pattern. So you're trying to achieve a pattern. If you think about, you know, a Tetris block, you could have the L or you could have the T. You're trying to get four of your color into a pattern. When you place a gray tile on the board, it swaps places with an adjacent tile. When you play a blue tile on the board, you push an adjacent tile one space in a direction. And when you play an orange tile, you remove a tile from the board. So I play a tile, you play a tile, it affects the other tile. I play a tile to affect the board space. And so the board is constantly changing colors and positions as we try to match our secret pattern.
I've really enjoyed playing this game. We did have a larger team playtest where we tried to expand it to more than two players, and that wound up not being very successful.
We had the inclination that it would be, that it would feel kind of chaotic, kind of random, and it was. So yeah, it didn't work as a four-player game, but we did think that in the future it might work as a collaborative two-on-two game, so you could have four players.
In light of that playtest and kind of the desire to have something that is interesting and playable come Gen Con, we've a little bit, at least in my head, I've kind of pushed aside the multiplayer aspect, and I'm really thinking of this game as a two-player game.
Yeah, that's where we're at right now.
Even in the two-player game, there's some big things that need revision. Currently, the patterns that we're trying to make in the game are only one color, and we found kind of a disproportionate strategy in if you're assigned playing orange and you get to pick whatever piece you want to play with freely, you just always remove your opponent's piece and they can never build a presence for their color in the game.
And we should talk about why we were testing that. We have been trying to figure out the best way to acquire tiles. How do you decide what tiles you have access to? And so initially it was a draft, and then we did random tiles assigned to you. And then we were trying, well, what if you could just pick your own tiles? You know, what would that look like? It's all about playtesting. I assumed that was going to be bad. But again, I think that's how you playtest. You try different things. And when we were doing that, it was pretty obvious quickly that if you were a certain color, your ability was just too powerful. And in fact, we've changed one already. Gray used to be when you place the tile, you could change the color of an adjacent tile. And we're like, too strong. And so now gray just switches places. Yeah, so when you're playing orange and you get to pick orange, you're just, you play a tile, I remove it. You play a tile, I remove it. It doesn't even matter if I'm going for my pattern. Eventually, the whole board is going to be orange if you can just pick your own tiles.
What that kind of means for where we are in terms of the state of the game and the things we're trying to solve for, we're really looking at kind of two big questions. One, what's the nature of the way that the board will be manipulated? And two, what's the way that we're going to access tiles that players will be able to play with?
So let's stay on two for a second. Initially, we did draft. How did you feel about draft?
When we say draft, we mean there's a set number of pieces that you would select from. You would take turns selecting from group A and group B. You would trade groups and you would go back and forth until you both have a new hand of four that you've selected. I was kind of ambivalent towards it. I did think it was kind of interesting in that it felt like the most effective way of trying to plan for your shape more than your color. And I thought that was interesting.
I think the early drafts for me felt like Well, I was always going to take gray first. Like, I was just going to take the more powerful ability. Didn't matter what color I was. I'm just going to take the thing that does the stronger thing. And then there were times where we were drafting where it felt like it was irrelevant. I have four gray tiles in my hand. I took the gray one. You took the gray one. I took the gray one. You took the gray one. And it didn't feel like I was doing anything strategic. But I felt the same way about just getting random tiles as well, which is why one of the reasons we started exploring was, well, what if you could just pick? And that didn't work because of balance between abilities. But I still feel like it's almost always wrong to not pick your color.
I think that might hint at there's something fundamental in the way that board manipulation needs to change, which we can talk about in a minute. But I want to stay on accessing tiles for just another minute. The most recent thing that I've been kind of thinking about or playing around with is, what if there were a shared row of a set number of each colored piece? You would play them from the common row, and once some criteria was met, the row would refresh. I was looking at it as a way to limit the number of orange pieces you could play in a row. I was looking at it as a way to require players to play with more than one color. I haven't played it live with another person yet, so I don't have a whole lot else to share, but that's the most recent approach or solution to the question that I've been thinking about recently.
I think a shared pool will be good to try, because then I feel like I'm making choices, I'm making decisions. Random tiles, I'm not. Sometimes when I was drafting, I was not. And I feel like with a shared pool, I'll have more opportunities to make a strategic decision. We also have to figure out how, and this plays into the tile question, the number of tiles we should be playing with, or the number of rounds we should have. Because initially we were just playing, you had to get your pattern in three rounds. You didn't have your pattern at the end of three rounds, you didn't win. And there were times where we both didn't win. I think in our more recent playtests, we've been playing until somebody wins, and it wasn't round-based, it was pattern-based.
I think that's the direction this game has to go. The three rounds rule in my head was a holdover from when we were imagining the game being Dying World and imagining like, oh, well, we wanted this aspect of if you don't complete in time, and having rounds count down is very compelling in kind of this race against the clock aspect that Dying World could have. Shove all that aside, because that's not the game we're making. And so I think it makes more sense to play to a conclusive winner.
Hard to move away from that sometimes, but you're right.
We've beat around the bush of it a little bit, so let's come back to the question of the tile interactions with the board. We've gotten some interesting feedback from the team. We've gotten kind of the sense of there is this imbalance in terms of how effective, how powerful one color is into another color. We've been very attached to the color of the piece dictates the manipulation on the board. I think we are at a point where we want to explore, well, what are the different imaginings of how the board can be manipulated?
We've been playing with gray, blue, and orange, and we've been playing with the same abilities. I say abilities, you say manipulations. You like bigger words. And we really haven't changed them much except for gray. And again, everything is still kind of a holdover from Dying World in some ways. Maybe we should make a list of all the different ways you could potentially move something. Currently, we're playing just adjacent. And so like you can move something up and down, left and right. There's no diagonal moves in the game right now. Why not that? Why can't we move something diagonally?
Why can't you pull a piece towards you instead of like through a gap?
Oh, from more than one,
like space,
one space away. Right, so right. Like, everything is adjacent currently. It has to be adjacent to do something.
So that would be one way of reimagining some of the board manipulations. Just getting, building a bigger repertoire of what we could possibly have in the game.
Right. I didn't even think of the one you just said about pulling, but yeah, that's like a thing you could do. So we should write all those things down. We should just make a list of all the potential things, and that allows us to test more, to try more.
Even if we were to change the way the board is being manipulated, if you're still adhering to color dictates manipulation, I think that's still a really limited way of looking at how the game could play. What are some other options that the team has shared or that you have on your mind?
The big one I'll point out is actually something that was, I don't know if it was first said, but it was said by our, and we're going to talk about this on a later show, is we are part of the Unpub mentorship program. And we have a mentor who is meeting with us once a week for the next few weeks to talk about our game, game design, how we can be successful at Gen Con. One of the things they said was, what if you separate the ability, the manipulation from the color? You play your colors, but the ability or manipulation comes from some other card or mechanic in some way. And we tried it one time. If you remember, we played one playtest where you could play a color that you had. We still drafted them, but then the manipulation came, you could choose of those three what you wanted to do. And then it was like a toggle switch. And once I've done it, then I can't do it until my opponent does it. And then it just goes back and forth. And so regardless if I'm playing gray, blue, or orange, I could potentially use any of the movements, any of the adjacent swaps or making something disappear. It didn't have to be an orange tile. I could make something disappear with a blue tile. That was our first attempt at separating them from the color. It didn't work well, but I think there's other ways that we can explore that. Separating the ability, the manipulation from the color is one way to change that.
I'm so bad. Also really like the idea of separating the ability from the color of the tile. You also dipped into what I thought of as the second most obvious alternate is restricting how often you can use a particular thing. Your switch system kind of did that by default and split the manipulation from the color.
Yeah, I think restricting is good. I just think the way that we tried it initially, it wasn't very smooth. So we have to continue to play with that because we had a funny game with I'm So Bad where he just chose not to use any of it. So I toggled them all over to him and then he just didn't use them until the very end of the game. Nobody won that game.
I think that's one of I'm So Bad's strengths on the team is looking at strategies and playing in a way to illustrate a point about how the game plays.
Yeah. Sometimes he hears like, you guys are trying to, what are you guys doing? I'm going to show you why that doesn't work. Let me show you.
Which is helpful.
It is.
I have a secret for you.
Yes. Go on.
There's a third question that we've been talking about that I think is worth talking about on the show a little bit. Hidden information or public information?
It's currently hidden. The pattern is hidden. We did one playtest where the patterns were visible, but nobody would ever put, so if there's four tiles you need, nobody would ever make the third set down and leave it open for somebody else. It was very weird. It felt very weird to play, but I'm not sure where you're going with shared. But before you do that, you know, I want to say to the audience, one of the key things in developing this game for me has been, we want the players to have some sense of what the other person is doing. And so when we played a four-player game, there's no way to tell what anybody was doing. Like, it was so chaotic. Everything was just constantly shifting and moving, and you couldn't zero in on what they were trying to do. When you and I are playing heads up, we're trying to figure out what color the person is trying to play and what pattern they're trying to achieve. It's very hard. And I think what we settled on was, let's at least for sure know their color. If I can know your color as early on as possible, I think that's good. If I can try to suss it out, you know, there's a couple of times where we've tried to play off color just to throw the beginning for a loop. But hidden information, I think so far, that's been a key element of what we're trying to design, because we want the person as they're playing going, oh, what is the other person doing? And how can I disrupt it a little bit? Are they blue? Oh, they're trying to make an L. I think they're trying to make an L. Let me make sure I can block it where I can. I think that has been the feeling we want people to have. Shared patterns would change that.
In the games that you and I have played, I feel like I've been able to reliably guess your color, but I know that wasn't necessarily the case in the two-player games that we tested with other folks from the team. I think you hit it exactly right why I was asking that question. I find the puzzling out the reasoning of what my opponent is doing in this game to be one of the more interesting things that you can do. And then it can inform your strategy if you're successful.
We could build a different game. I could put 6 tiles out instead of just 1 or 2 that are all shared and visible. And then you could build towards whatever you want. That would be, you know, especially if there were 2 different blue shapes. Maybe you're trying to make a blue square and a blue Z. You wouldn't know exactly which one the person's going to go for, but they know those are options. You could design that. You could do that. It's just a different game. Something we'd have to playtest and see how it feels.
Words from so long ago, playtest and feels. How do you feel about abstract game?
I would say abstract game has been unexpected. Until I think about some of the games I've enjoyed playing, I've played a lot of Blockus. I didn't really think about that before, but chess and Go and checkers, they're all abstract games. I've spent a lot of time playing abstract games. I've started playing Azul on Board Game Arena. I really like it. I have tried to play Patchwork a couple of times, but I still don't quite understand the rules. But it turns out, like, I've actually played a lot of abstract games. I didn't realize that, because when I think of games and I think of board games, you know, I'm just instantly thinking about
Settlers of Catan.
No, I'm thinking about, like, I'm a wizard and I want to destroy you and I'm going to use a magic spell, Slay the Spire, and I'm going to kill a monster. That's what I think about initially. So it was unexpected to find myself in that realm, because I thought I was building a really, like, deep theme game about the dying world. The things the team liked about Dying World were just the abstractness of what we were doing. So I'm happy that people are, I won't say your word, I won't say the E word. I'm happy that people have enjoyed playing the game and have found it interesting.
Onward and upward to iterating on abstract game. Or onward and sideways.
Sideways feels right.
Onward and adjacent.
Good use of adjacent. Maybe diagonal. Before we go, let's give a little roadmap for the audience of what we're trying to do. Start with, and we'll work backwards, end of July, first exposure playtest hall. We're taking abstract game to the hall to playtest. We'll be in there a couple of hours each day and playing with people. What do we have to do before then? We could take what we have right now and use your pieces from school that we've been using to play.
I fully believe we use the pieces from school.
I don't, but we could, and it would be okay. That's where we're trying to go. What are some of the things that we want to achieve in the next 2 months?
To feel good about what we bring to Gen Con, I think the questions we laid out tonight are the most important things to answer in my mind. After that, I think we need to put it in front of people that are not the team along the way to showing it at the first exposure playtest hall. And then I think we need to spend some time thinking about the pitch. How do you pitch the game? How do you teach the game? How do you present the game? This is where you get to do your marketing stuff. This is the stuff you like.
Business. I know, but it is. But I'm just thinking about timelines and going to an artist and saying, hey, give me a mock-up. This is the name we've settled on. It's going to be Shish Kebabs.
You heard it here first, folks.
Being able to settle on those things so that we can go to somebody and say, you know, what does this look like? Been using the pieces from your school, these little puzzle pieces, but what would an actual tactile piece, how would we want it to feel? It's not, we don't have to have that for Gen Con, but we want to be able to show it off.
I think that's true, but I also think regardless of what state or what quality of components you bring to the first exposure playtest hall, we will need to have some kind of message or vision or way of describing what the game will be. You're not going to have your final prototype ready to package
sure
for Gen Con. And so having like a shared language of how do you sell the game to people? How do you build that email list so we can get more people reading our newsletter?
Good answers.
But it is those things. I think there's put the game into a place where we're going to enjoy bringing it and putting it in front of people, which requires us to put it in front of people before we get to Gen Con. And then kind of have the, you know, what's the story? What's our story? How are we selling the game? What's the game about? How do you teach it? What's the elevator pitch? We'll have 2 hours, but how do you get people to want to sit down and play your game?
Perfect.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Ajos, Brian Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors.
Abstract game, the final pivot, which just might be the name of the game.
It's an excellent name for the game. I kind of dig it.
It's better than hors d'oeuvres.
We're really burying the lead on a lot of our bits for tonight.
We are. These things will be funnier later.
I don't believe that's true.